Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we're going to talk about people with green thumbs and those that don't have green thumbs a little bit when it comes to indoor plants. Maybe yours could use a little help. Maybe you've got some questions about the types of indoor plants that are fragrant or that just look nice or that are easy care. Or maybe you've got an issue with some of your plants. I hope you'll join us because Johanna Oosterwyk is with us. She's the instructional manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the campus of the UW-Madison. And we'll talk with her about the greenhouse a little bit. Basic houseplant care and take your questions and comments. So I hope you'll join in. We've already had some folks shoot a photo and send it on our Facebook page. So we'll comment on it because there's some white spots on those violets, and we'll see what we can come up with for that. You can do that as well. The Larry Mueller Show, that's the title of the Facebook page. Certainly post a question or comment and or photo right there. And Johanna Oosterwyk, welcome.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to be here.
Great to have you with us today. Tell us about the D.C. Smith Greenhouse.
So, like you said, D.C. Smith is the instructional greenhouse for the College of Agriculture. This year is our 20th anniversary. We opened in 1996 and started classes then, but the grand official opening didn't actually happen until April of 97. So, for the last 20 years, we've been supporting classes on the UW campus. Any plant science classes, horticulture, of course, agronomy, plant pathology. Professors can bring their students in to look at the plants we have. We have space available for them to grow plants, to let their students get experience hands-on working with the plants in a space where we can grow them and we can make a mess. So we've got space for the students to work there rather than taking the plants outside. Mm-hmm. Classes start next week, and the students can come to the plants rather than having to bundle them up and walk them, in some cases, across the street to the plant pathology classes.
Well, I tell you, it's pretty cool. And the commons, you've got a kind of a commons public area that is very cool.
Yeah, we do. We've got a 1,300-square-foot conservatory, not nearly as grand as what they have at Olbrich, but...
if you're on campus, though, it's pretty nice to stop in and take a look around.
It is, and it's great to walk in and feel the living things around you, even on a cold day like today.
And your own, you provide a fair amount of education and talk about give your background a little bit and what plants you're most familiar with and work with, types of things.
Okay, so my background is ornamental plants, mm-hmm. herbaceous perennials and annuals, and of course houseplants, and greenhouse cultivation. I actually teach classes for the Department of Horticulture. So in addition to managing the greenhouse, every fall I teach a class in herbaceous ornamentals. And starting on Tuesday, early in the morning, I will be teaching greenhouse cultivation to a new group of students.
So it sounds like a lot of fun. And people can stop by and visit the greenhouse.
We love to have visitors.
Yeah.
Sometimes the greenhouses on campus can be a little hard to get to, but we are right on the corner of Babcock and Linden, just half a block from the dairy store if you want to go get some ice mm-hmm. cream or some cheese. And come in, enjoy our conservatory, sit down, and enjoy your snack there. Lunchtime, it's actually a little hard to get a seat. We do have benches, but this time of year, it's a hot commodity.
Oh, yeah. It's just cold outside. You go into that nice, warm, moist kind of atmosphere.
Yes.
And it is fun. It is very nice. Well, John in Wausau has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. Hi, Johanna and Larry. I have a Ficus lorata that I rescued from a florist shop, and it looked all right. It's about 3 feet tall. I put it in the shower and gave it a shower, cleaned it up, gave it some water, and it did beautifully at the top of my stairs at an open window, window that gets full sun in the afternoon. And about 3 weeks after that, it looked absolutely amazing. Now it looks really bad. It's losing its leaves. It's getting brown spots. I don't know what's going wrong with it. I'm wondering if I could get some advice.
Oh. Any thoughts on that one, Johanna?
What's the temperature like in that spot? Sounds like you've got plenty of sun, but is there any chance there's a draft?
I don't think there's a draft. It's at the very top of the stairs, and it's a pretty tight building, actually.
Okay.
So I know they ficus generally don't like drafts. Is that right?
Yeah, in general, they're tropical plants, and
I'm worried it might be too dry, or it might be too hot. Is it? Could it be too hot? It's like 74 in here.
Well, it should be a nice temperature for it, wouldn't it be?
It should be, but if there's an imbalance between the water, if it's staying too dry, or if there was, you know, if it grew so well for you to begin with, I wouldn't think you had root problems.
Okay.
But if your house is dry and it's sitting in the sun,
okay,
that could be using a lot of water. So,
and is there a rule of thumb on how to tell if you need to water? They said something like if the surface is dry, the top inch to water it.
That's a good rule for something like a ficus.
Okay. So maybe just I may need to give it more water. Is that, I was afraid I was going to rot the roots out because I tend to do that with houseplants. That's why I usually don't get them. I usually kill them.
Sure.
All right.
So if it is drying down from the top, double check that your container has drainage. Are there holes in the bottom to let the water out?
Okay.
You know, and it's not sitting in water.
Yeah, and not sitting in water.
Okay.
So check that, and yeah, you know, in addition to checking that top inch of soil, you could also pick it up if it's not too heavy. I don't know if you've got it in a clay pot or a plastic one.
Yeah, it's in a plastic one, which I want to replace once, you know, spring comes. I want to get like something, I guess like an inch bigger or something. Is that a good rule of thumb to use?
Yep, that is.
Okay, and the other thing, let me see, there was one other thing I wanted to ask you about it. I had some sphagnum moss on the top to try and help prevent evaporation,
mm-hmm.
and I was afraid then that I was going to get fungus gnats or something, so I took it off. Is that, what do you think of putting moss on the top?
It shouldn't be a problem if you're not overwatering.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like it's being overwatered.
No, I think it's being underwatered.
Yeah, I would check humidity. You know,
humidity
our house is this.
It's about 24% in the house. Which
that's really low.
That's really
is
low.
It?
Yep.
It should
yeah,
be
my piano doesn't
40.
Like it either.
Sure.
And when I turn the humidity up, though, in this weather, then the windows start to freeze up, you know?
Right.
So,
you know, for
know
just that plant, you could try misting it once a day.
Okay.
If you do have a tray underneath it, you could fill that tray, not the pot, fill that
right.
tray with rocks
okay.
and pour some water on that to let it evaporate. And
all
just
right.
create
how
a little
long do you
humid
think it'll
microclimate.
Take to recover?
Yeah.
How long do you think it might take to recover?
Well, the brown spots aren't going to go away.
Okay.
It'll have to grow new foliage. And that's going to start happening as the temperatures rise and the, well, you've got warm temperatures in there. But as you get more sun, it should start to
it
grow out of it.
Come back, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your help. I appreciate
yeah.
it.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Got a photo up on our Facebook page. And this is from Rebecca. So any idea what's wrong with this African violet? It's in a clay pot, constantly in bloom, and always water from the bottom. But once the flowers open, they start to get these white spots. And we've got a nice photo she sent with these white spots. And they'll take over each bloom.
Well,
any ideas on that one?
Definitely appreciate the flower. Two things come to mind right away. One might be insect feeding. There's a chance it might be thrips, though from this picture I don't see that. Thrips you often see chewing on the petals because they mm-hmm. like to eat flowers. And they leave silvery streaks, but they also leave little black specks. Resolution on the picture isn't quite good enough to see anything like that if it's there. But if, and you said it tends to cover the entire flower, if it ends up streaky white and little black specks, that's definitely going to be thrips damage. And they're a tiny, tiny insect. My other thought was maybe botrytis, which is a mold. Sometimes flowers in high humidity situations will get basically a gray mold.
Mm-hmm.
And that will spread through the whole flower. You might see a little bit of that, you know, fuzzy look to it eventually, if that's what it is.
What about, what do you do if it's thrips? Let's say it's thrips. What would you do to get rid of the thrips?
Thrips are a pain for me in the greenhouse where I am. And you don't often see them in houseplants. But if it was that, there are a couple of different chemical insecticides you could use.
Mm-hmm.
Safer soap, that which we often recommend for houseplants, isn't going to do a great job because the thrips like to hide down in the cracks and crevices, and you'd have to get really good coverage. A better one to use would be a systemic insecticide. Mm-hmm. You can get granular formulations with the active ingredient imidacloprid. And those little granules you put in the soil, the plant takes it up, and then when the insect feeds on the plant, they ingest it.
Okay.
So that's also...
Sounds like safe for a houseplant, too, then.
Yeah.
Which, and imidacloprid is a word that I always have trouble. I have to think for a second before I say it, but it's going to kill the thrips, but it's not something that's going to be a problem in the household in that form.
No, if the granular form is going to stay in the roots. Now, if you have cats or something that are going to dig up the soil, then you're going to want to, you know, put it out of reach in some way. And you definitely wouldn't want to use it if you were starting vegetable transplants or something.
Because sure.
Anything that you were going to ingest, you'll pick that up too.
Let's turn to Audrey in Racine next. Hi, Audrey. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I brought some plants into winter over for the spring. And when I brought them in, I also brought in spider mites and introduced them to my household plants.
Oh, I feel so sorry for you.
What is the best way to get rid of these spider mites or treat the household plants?
So for spider mites, you can use that safer soap to kill them off. The first thing I would do is put them in the shower and wash them all down. One thing spider mites don't like is humidity. So they like our houses in the winter because they're warm and dry. But they don't like the moisture. So raising the humidity around your plants, misting them, will help cut back on that infestation. And just hosing the plants down to begin with can wash away a lot of those. And then you can treat them with an insecticidal soap spray as well, but get good coverage because they're tiny.
Okay. I've heard other people saying just take like a small drop or two of water, like just soap in water and put it on a spray bottle. Would that help?
Sometimes ivory soaps will work. Spider mites are a little trickier, but you could certainly give that a try, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Sometimes you have to be a little careful about some of the soaps you use. That's why safer soap, I think, is good.
Yeah, it's
It doesn't
easier
have
on
other chemicals plants. That could damage the leaves or the flowers themselves.
Well, sometimes it can.
Yeah.
I actually wouldn't spray flowers with it if you wanted to keep those flowers.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, won't hurt the plant so badly that it won't flower again. And if your big issue is trying to get rid of the pests, well, that can be a side effect. So you might want to spray just a little bit of the plant first to see if you have a bad side effect.
Mary on Facebook says she'll be vacationing for a month at the end of January. So month of February, she'll be gone. When she left for 2 weeks in December, she saturated all of her houseplants and set the thermostat at 55, and they did well. She would like to close most of the shades for the month to help insulate the house this time around. Is a month too long for plants to go without direct sun? I'm considering putting all of them in the dining room where the thermostat is. It has a southern exposure and large windows with large lace curtains. Would they get enough sun through the curtains? Any other advice is welcome.
You know, I don't think that's a bad idea. If you're going to put them in a space that has as much sun as you can give them and make sure that they stay warm, this time of year they're not going to be using a lot of water. So, yeah, I wouldn't put them without sun for an entire month. But
lacy kind of curtain.
Yeah, with direct sun from the south, that's probably as good as you're going to get, and you'll still get some good illumination. And if you're not home and watering them constantly, they
probably
did okay for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I think you might be able to give it a try, particularly if they're standard foliage houseplants.
Johanna Oosterwyk, our guest today. She is the instructional manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the campus of the UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest today, Johanna Oosterwyk, manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the UW-Madison campus. Again, you can join in 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. Let's turn to Carol Ann in Cedar Grove next. Carol Ann, thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
And, I have a... It's called a coleus, I guess.
Okay.
And it has, and every time it leaves out beautiful. And right now it's in flower, but the leaves are all falling off. They get like a mold on them and little black spots, and then they just kind of dry up and die off. And I was wondering what that was and how I can treat it.
Okay. What do you think, Johanna?
Most likely it's botrytis if things are a little too humid. That can often happen. What can you do to treat it? Well, there are some over-the-counter fungicides. The easiest thing would be to try and reduce the humidity if you can do that. Is your house kind of humid or is it in a wetter spot?
No, I haven't watered it now for at least a week.
Okay.
And I don't know, it just keeps doing it.
Yeah. Just growing it. Well, once the mold spores are there, they do kind of hang around. You could treat the areas around them with a little bit of a bleach or something, just a 10% bleach solution.
Okay.
Probably better if you just wipe it. Or, you know what, a Lysol wipe would be just as good and probably easier on any of your surfaces.
Okay.
So clean up as much of the area as possible to get rid of any, mold spores or any bits of that pathogen that are sticking around.
Would that be in the soil?
It might be a little bit in the soil, too, but just by reducing the amount of it on any surfaces, that's going to help. You could also cut back parts of the plant where it starts to show up. I don't know how much of your plant you have left if it's been hitting it for a while.
Yeah, it's been hitting it now. Well, every time I bring it in from outside... Well, it does the same thing outside, but when I bring it in, it's like new, you know. It starts all over again. And then all of a sudden, it's all the mold on it again.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of those wipes.
Yeah, I'll try those then.
Yeah. It's definitely worth a try. And if we come up with some other thoughts here while we're going along, Carol Ann, we'll certainly bring them up. So stay listening.
Thank you.
And it's a mold first and then black spots?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a white fuzz on it, and then that turns into little black specks on it, and the leaf just dies off.
Yeah, that does sound like gray mold. Yeah,
okay.
Just cut away, destroy any effective parts, and try to maybe scrape off that top layer of the soil in the pot to get rid of any spores.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea either. Thank you, Carol Ann. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Over on Facebook, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, Crystal says her shamrock plant looks like it's going dormant. Still has new growth, but the leaves are sunken and droopy and turning yellow and brown. Well, that's not good. This has been going on for 2 months. She stopped watering about a month ago. The plant's over 3 years old, had flowered off and on, but never has done this before. Any other suggestions about what she might do for her shamrock plant?
If it hasn't done this before, a couple of things come to mind. Is it really crowded in the pot? Might benefit some repotting.
Okay.
Repot it, check and see if that crown is sound or if it's getting a little mushy. Turning yellow and brown and dropping off might have been overwatering, and the plant just needs a rest. So take a look at the roots, see if they're firm and white and clean smelling, and repot it, give it a little more space.
Now, if you find this kind of mushy stuff, you just cut it off, or do you, on the roots, or do you just let it go?
No, I would definitely remove whatever was there and cut down to, if you have a clean spot left.
Go to the clean, keep that and
right.
get rid of the rest.
Because anything that's dead and dying is just going to be a habitat for more disease.
Yeah, so it's not a bad, and then you're repotting, so you're putting in new potting soil and getting the plant off to a good start again.
Yeah, yeah, make sure the new soil is clean so you're not bringing any new diseases. And wash your hands between the cutting away and the repotting.
And the repotting, yeah, good advice. Well, we have other questions here. Hank emailed to ask what plants are best to help remove paint, glue, and varnish gases in the air. Probably need a lot of them, Hank. I don't know. What do you think, Joanna?
Well, there have been some studies done. Actually, this one study was done by NASA in the late 70s to look at what plants help to purify the air. Top of that list were snake plant or mother-in-law's tongue and spider plant, some really common house plants. But this is something that I wish someone would look into. Because yeah. every time I see the report about plants purifying the air, it always goes back to that first NASA study. Like, there's not been anything done
since then.
In the 40 years since then. So I'd really like somebody to look at that. The list that they have are a lot of common houseplants, and it seems like maybe everything they tested was doing that. So I think there's probably more plants that do help to clean the air.
But
we just don't know because we haven't tested them.
What are the two you mentioned again? Spider
plants, Chlorophytum, and snake plant, Sansevieria. I think Aglaonema is also on that list, and Pothos, or Devil's Ivy.
All right, so there we go. There's some good advice for Hank, and maybe you as well. And let's go to Alita in Oconomowoc next. Hi, Alita. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Well, I have a very old Christmas cactus that had belonged to my mother-in-law. It was up north for, you know, decades, and I brought it back down here about a year ago. And I really just don't know what to do with it. It doesn't look unhealthy, but it also doesn't ever bloom. I think I saw it bloom once in probably 40 years back up north.
Oh, well, there's a lot of reasons for that. Too much care is one of them.
Yeah.
The primary reason I would think of is it just hasn't been told to bloom. So plants are often responsive to their environment. And Christmas cactus, I give mine a cold treatment every fall. I actually leave them outside through October, let them get a couple of weeks of cold nights down into the 40s, you know, low 50s, high 40s, and mine bloom beautifully. They need that signal that the seasons are changing.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm sure that's never been done with this plant. It was always indoors.
Right. So give it a few weeks if you've got, you know, a back bedroom that doesn't get warm. So it probably bloomed beautifully for your grandmother or aunt, I forget who you said it came from. My grandmother had an unheated porch, but it was still warm enough that the plant stayed alive, stayed healthy, but they always bloomed beautifully because the plant had that seasonal trigger that told it, hey, it's time to bloom.
I'm pretty sure she always kept it in the kitchen. It was my husband's mom.
Okay.
And I always sat in the kitchen, you know, year round. So put it in a back bedroom or someplace that's cool.
Right.
Remember October?
Yep. Or like I said, I used to just leave mine out in a cold frame through October. You know, water it when it needed it. But that was that environmental trigger to tell it, hey, it's time to bloom.
And don't overwater it either.
Yeah.
When would you put it out there? August? Or you just left it there all year?
I would take my houseplants outside in the summer. For the ones that I have at the D.C. Smith Greenhouse, I usually take them outside early September and leave them there through most of October. Uh-huh. If we're going to have a hard frost, which is possible at the end of October, I would close the cold frame or maybe just bring them inside. You don't want to let them get below, you know, 40 degrees.
Okay, so just get them into an environment for a couple months where there's a cold signal.
Right.
Okay. Huh. All right. That's great advice. Thank you.
You're
thanks,
welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. I had one in my office that bloomed all the time, and I never watered it, and it was always cool. It was pretty cool in that office, especially at night. So sounds like good advice. Let's go to Craig in Monona next. Hi, Craig.
I was just going to say we met a lady in the early 70s, and she was a great plant person. But we'd go out with her because she couldn't drive, and she would bring her plants home. But she had this little deal. She wouldn't let a plant come into her house until it was in the hospital for at least a month or two. And I asked her one time what the deal was. She said, well, she said, I don't want to introduce diseases to my healthy plants.
Yep.
And that woman could grow anything. That's all I have.
Well, thanks a lot for calling.
It's good advice. I have a friend who won't accept poinsettias because she doesn't want white flies in her house plants.
Oh, so, and you're going to find them on poinsettias.
You might. I mean, most greenhouses are very good about keeping their plants clean, but poinsettias are one plant that white flies love. And she just discovered that she'd been bitten by the white fly bug. So. Checking your plants before you bring them home, always a good idea.
Diana in Superior is next. Hi, Diana.
Well, hi, Larry. I'm calling about my poinsettia plant that we received for Christmas. First of all, it's the largest poinsettia that I've ever seen in my life. It must be 3 or 4 feet by 3 or 4 feet.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's dropping its leaves.
Mm.
And it started a couple of days after we received it. We've been checking, for moisture and whatever, and we had this little card that said what to do. But whether we water it or don't water it, it's dropping its leaves.
Sure. Well, I've got to tell you, if it started that soon after you got it, it probably wasn't something you did.
Okay.
Most likely it got some drought stress before it came to you, so if it got dried out, the plants will naturally get that big and get even bigger. They're native in Mexico, and you see them as
shrubs.
I've
seen some 10-footers.
Yeah. So they're really giant plants. We cut them back drastically.
Yes, well, we've never seen one this large here in Superior at our house.
Anyway. Sure, I understand.
But it should come back, though, shouldn't it?
It should. You won't get those new flowers. Unfortunately, it's just going to come back as green leaves.
Mm-hmm.
You might, if a lot of the leaves are dropping off, if you want to keep this as a house plant, you could pinch it back. But it's not, they're not great house plants. They're what we call, potted flowering plants.
Right.
They're kind of seasonal. You bring them in, you enjoy them, and then you let it go.
Mm-hmm.
But if you did want to keep it, you could let those leaves drop off, keep the soil evenly moist, don't water it regularly, but pinch it back, and then late spring, late April, early May, start watering it again, and it'll put out a new flush of growth, so you'll get new green leaves. But like the Christmas cactus, you're not going to get the flowers unless you give it that environmental trigger.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of poinsettias, it's actually sunlight, not temperature.
Okay.
Poinsettias don't like cold temperatures at all.
Mm-hmm.
But what they need is to know that the seasons are changing. And as the days get shorter in the fall, that's their signal to start to flower.
I see. Well, we can give it a try. My hope was to just keep it going until the middle of January so I could tell my son and his wife that it was still living.
Well, you
it
can
is
keep
the
it
middle
alive.
Of January.
Yeah,
Sunday's
yeah.
the 15th.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the end of January.
Okay.
You'll keep it going, Diana. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you both.
Sure.
Appreciate it. And open lines, you can join in. We'll get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We have several emails and so forth on here. Let's see what we've got next. Oh, Hank emailed us. Oh, we've already... We've already talked about Hank. Jim called in to say he has a ficus, and whenever he moves it, it loses a bunch of leaves until it becomes acclimated. He says as long as there's a new growth, it should be fine. So commenting back on that, that's good.
Yep, that's pretty typical of ficus.
Gigi on Facebook says she has a dehydrated plumeria branch. Should she root it in water or soil?
I would definitely recommend soil. Succulent plants like the plumeria don't necessarily like being in water culture. So soil would be better. We use a mix of peat moss and perlite, 50-50, to do a lot of our rooting. If it's dehydrated, like actually dried out, I'm not sure how successful that's going to be. but keep the humidity up around it. You can just put a clear plastic bag around your pot or whatever you're rooting it into to keep the humidity up around it.
Makes good sense. Let's go to Laurel next in Milwaukee. Hi, Laurel. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi there. I always enjoy this show. I have a comment about the poinsettias that you enjoy over the winter. And I've put mine outside for the summer, and they did really well. I was surprised. I put them in park shade, and they just thrived. And true, they lose the red leaves, and that's fine. But they just, one of them almost doubled in size. I brought it back in. And I didn't try to make it get red again. It's too complicated for me. But they look great in, you know, in the house, and I put it back out in the next summer.
Well, good.
Good for you, Laurel. That's
nice.
Yeah, that's the way to keep it going. And, you know, a lot of plants like it to get outside, especially poinsettias.
And it makes a very attractive branching habit. I mean, it really is a nice-looking outdoor plant.
Yeah. Do you pinch yours back at all or just let it grow?
No, I just let it just do its thing outside. It looks great. Yeah, I was surprised. Great.
Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Mark in Elkhart Lake up next. Hi, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Well, thank you for answering and for all that you do. I really enjoy this, especially Friday show.
Oh, thank you.
Although they're all good. My question is about fertilizer and feeding houseplants and also about a hibiscus. I've got two of them that are about 5 feet tall. Sometimes they bloom and sometimes they don't. So I'm really wondering how I might feed those also.
Okay. So we've got sort of a general fertilizing question and then one sort of specific to hibiscus.
Mm-hmm. General rule of thumb for houseplants is fertilize them when they're actively growing. Depending on the plant, their active growing phase will be a little bit different, but overall, midwinter isn't the time to fertilize your houseplants. So right now, there's not a lot of light. Temperatures are cool. Plants are just kind of sitting there and waiting. So I don't recommend fertilizing midwinter. But when the light days start to get longer, light is more intense, temperatures start to get warmer, say March or April, we can start slowly feeding them again. And then stop when the temperatures start to get cool in late fall. So generally, we only want to fertilize our plants when they're actively growing in the spring and summer and very early fall.
Okay.
Now, what about the hibiscus?
For those hibiscus, my primary thought would be more sun, even out of doors. So the general rule is more sun equals more flowers. Often, if they don't get enough light, they'll put out some leaves, but they don't have the extra energy needed to put on that show of flowers.
They're in a lot of sunlight. We have in a sunroom that's exposed. I guess I'm wondering how about also when to fertilize or feed them.
So okay. Follow that same rule. If you're using a high nitrogen fertilizer, that can make the plant put out more foliage as well. So if you look at like a turf grass fertilizer, that first three-number code tells you what the chemicals are, nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. Turf fertilizers have a lot of nitrogen because we just want to grow grass. So your fertilizer, if you want to grow flowers, should have a lower nitrogen number, and those other two numbers should be higher. So like a 14-14-14 would be a good houseplant fertilizer that should give you flowers as well as foliage.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, I use fish emulsion for limey, my lime tree.
You named it?
Well, my daughter named it. And limey produces all kinds of limes. In fact, limey's just now, I'm looking at all those little limes that are just now starting on limey, and I actually throw some of that fish emulsion in with my water once a week.
Okay.
And it's not a very high potent.
No, it's not very strong. I mean, I said 14, 14, 14, but that's a really high concentration. Your fish emulsion's going to be like 1% nitrogen.
So I'm not, Well, I don't appear to have been having any problems because it's been a few years now, and it seems to be doing just fine.
Yeah, I never argue with experience.
With good experiences, yeah, you bet. Jan in Viroqua, hello, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. I have a Sansevieria snake plant that was absolutely unstoppable when I had it with me in my apartment in Iowa, where it was in a west window, partially obstructed west window, and benign neglect. And when I moved here, I have this gorgeous southern exposure window, and I'm around my plants a lot more. So I had thought it would like the light, and I was probably watering it more than I had, and it has started dying off. So I'm watering it too much, and the southern exposure is too strong, and I've moved it off to the side, and I'm not going to water it until it starts to droop. Mm-hmm. Am I on the right track?
Yeah, cut back on the watering until the plant really needs it. When you say dying, what are the symptoms?
The young leaves are not thriving. They're getting yellow, and I could pull one of them out of the soil really easily.
Okay.
And a bunch of leaves toward the center of the plant yellowed off.
Okay, yeah, you're right on about the overwatering. Is it is the soil still sitting there wet right now?
I don't know. I haven't stuck my finger in it.
Okay.
Lately. I did buy a soil, you know,
moisture meter
thing. Yes, thank you.
I've got one of those too.
The surface of the Sansevieria is no longer wet. I do now have the moisture meter, which I haven't stuck in it yet.
Okay. Yeah, if the soil is still really saturated, I would actually get the plant out of that. The symptoms you're describing sound severe enough that you'd almost be better off just pulling it out of the pot to let it dry out rather than sitting any longer in that wet soil.
Interesting. If it's still wet down below. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Good luck, Jan.
Repot it into clean, sterile potting soil. And give it a day or so to heal over before lightly watering it.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks so
good.
Much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know, a few times now we've come up, people have mentioned different pots they're using. Some are using plastic. Some are using, what am I trying to say here?
Terracotta or clay.
Yeah. Any preference on your side on that? Or does it depend on the plant itself?
That's what I was going to say. It depends on what I'm growing. I like terracotta plants or pots for plants that are more succulent. All my cactus are in terracotta. Terracotta breathes, and it's harder to overwater because the pot itself is wicking away some of the moisture that's in the container. On the other hand, I've got some plants that I'll put into plastic because it will keep them moist.
You don't have
that evaporation that happens through the sides of the pots.
Okay.
But absolutely, I'd recommend putting any succulent or cactus into a clay pot.
Clay pot. Okay. We have other questions here online. I want to get to some of those as well because we've had quite a few. Suzanne on Facebook says she gets a horrible scale infestation on her Scheflera. Every year. She's used insecticides, totally washed the plants and given them all new soil and pots. She spent hours with alcohol-soaked cotton balls. Mm-hmm. How can she kill these creepers for good?
Oh, it sounds like you've done all the things that I would recommend. What insecticides have you used? You might try that systemic imidacloprid that I mentioned. Again, that gets into the plant. They take it up from the soil. So if you're using a spray, you always end up missing a few. I don't know if this is a plant you take inside and outside every year. Might put it outside and hope that some of our natural predators give you a hand by eating the little tiny crawlers. So scale are actually the adult forms, and then in between the adult forms, the little tiny babies are what we call crawlers, and they creep around for about 2 or 3 days, find a spot they like and then create that hard armored scale around them. But it sounds
nasty
like you're already...
Nasty little devils.
Oh, they're awful.
They're
sounds
awful.
Like you're already doing the things but that I would recommend.
Yeah, but the imidacloprid sounds like a good idea for something.
If you
like
haven't
that.
Tried that yet, give it a go.
Johanna Oosterwijk, our guest today, manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the campus of the UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network as we talk about houseplants with our guest today, Johanna Oosterwijk, manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the UW-Madison campus. Open lines will get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Getting lots of Facebook and email questions, too. Our Facebook page, go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. And Mary Bird on Facebook says her gardenia is turning brown and losing its leaves. It does every year. She is misting. There's no draft, and the room is 65 degrees. It had mites last year, but not this year. Any suggestions there with her gardenia?
Yeah, those are the things I would suggest. Mist it. Gardenias do not like low humidity, and they don't like low temperatures. So you've got those two primary things covered.
Not sure what else it could be. It could be humidity, even if she, depending on how much she's misting or what the humidity. If the humidity is like the earlier caller that had, 24% or something?
Right, if it's so low, but if she's misting, that will help raise it up. I'd be curious to know if it's the flowers themselves that are turning brown. Is it flowering indoors? And are the leaves turning brown and falling off? Just a couple of questions that I have before I can really give a good answer, I think.
Okay, well, maybe she can send another note on Facebook or just give us a call. Let's go to Jeff in Waukesha next. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I have a windowless office, but I'd love to have some foliage there.
Okay.
What's a good recommendation? Do I need special lighting? I've currently only got fluorescence.
Yeah, you're going to need some extra light. Is it an office that you're in just weekdays?
Yeah.
Okay. So
hit and miss. I travel a bit to work, but it's usually local. So.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, they're doing marvelous things with plastics. but if you do want something that's actively growing, you'll need to invest in some lights, something maybe with a timer that you can leave on for a couple of hours a day after you're in there, as well as on the weekend, something that'll turn on and off by itself, even if you're not in there.
Okay.
You know, I use a lamp, and I've just got a, you know, like a gooseneck lamp with some of the new... grow lights that they have out there now, that use less energy.
The LEDs?
Yeah, the LEDs. And they seem to work really good as long as you keep the light close.
And then the nice thing about LEDs is you can get quite close to the plants.
Okay.
They don't radiate heat the way an incandescent does. They still get hot off the back, but they won't burn the plants. Because the heat goes the opposite direction of the light.
Okay.
As far as plant recommendations, some things that will do well in a low-light environment are Aspidistra. It's literally the cast iron plant because, really, they're supposed to be incredibly hard to kill. But any of our low-light house plants, Aglaonema, the Chinese evergreen, Pothos or Devil's Ivy, again, snake plants, some of those low-light plants you could probably do fine with some extra lighting, even indoors.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much for the help.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks for calling. And Jim in Kakana is up next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I've got a problem with my peace lily. It looks really sick. My wife says throw it out. It's got some bugs on it, and I thought about using insecticidal soap, but that'll get it all wet, and I know they don't like a whole lot of moisture.
Peace lilies actually don't mind moisture.
They don't.
No. they tend to be one of those, what I call loud plants. They tell you when they want to be watered. So if you haven't watered it, it will get all droopy, almost like at the snap of a finger. It goes from, I'm okay, to, hey, water me. and they're okay a little bit on the wet side. I've even seen them planted on top of betta tanks. So you get that little tank with a fish in it, and then they'll put a peace lily on top. So they don't mind having their roots a little bit wet.
Can you throw it in the shower to get rid of the insects that are on it, or is that too much? She's pondering.
I didn't,
no. Oh, I was asking. I thought you were asking Jim. Yeah, you could certainly throw it in the shower, but I'd want to know what kind of insects they are.
They're little black bugs like gnats.
Okay, and they're kind of hovering around?
Right.
Yep, you've probably got fungus gnats then. And usually that's paired with high soil moisture. So you might repot it, change the soil, and then do keep it a little on the dry side.
Okay, what soil should I use for that?
A standard potting mix should be fine. When you say it's sick, what do you mean? Is it just the insects, or are there some other symptoms?
Well, the leaves are getting all brown.
Mm-hmm.
What's left of the leaves, and all there is pretty much right now, it's getting down to just stems from the leaves that is left. So I think the bugs are sucking out the moisture from the leaves.
Well, if it's fungus gnats, they're not actually attacking the plant. They're more of a nuisance. But what they're telling you is that things are wet. And those symptoms do make me think of overwatering. Now, it is just a peace lily. Are you attached to this plant?
Well, we got it when my mother died.
Oh, okay.
I kind of wanted it. But...
Yeah. No, that's the thing with houseplants is they're our pets. We love them. They have stories, like the one, the Christmas cactus that the woman got from her husband's mother. So, I mean, they have...
Just replant it and try again?
Yep, I would clean it off, like I said, with replanting that other plant. Clean off the roots, knock off the old soil, make sure that you do have some healthy roots there, and then keep it clean and put it in some new pot and try and keep it a little drier.
All right, I'll try that once.
If it
doesn't work, I'll call you back.
Okay.
All right. I want to hear, you want to be able to tell your wife I told you so is what it sounds like to me, Jim. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, boy. Carol and Sullivan, hello. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have a Gerber daisy, which lives outside and inside. And I did repot it once. It's 3 years old, going on four. I brought it in the house this year. Last summer, it didn't bloom, but I brought it in the house, and it's in a south window, a cool bedroom, and it does get sun when the sun is out. And then I noticed I have three plants in there all of a sudden instead of one, and now a flower is growing. I want to know when I can repot. I know they like a crowded root, and I just want to know what I should do with it now. Do I fertilize it and let it go and transplant it in little pots, all three of them, in the spring?
That would be my recommendation. Generally, you don't want to disturb the root while it's flowering. It's putting a lot of effort into that, and you might lose any future flowers that would be coming up. So wait until spring when you can put it outside and give it a little bit of fertilizer. Wouldn't hurt if it's actively flowering and growing.
Yeah, it is now.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks very much for calling. And Mary Beth in New Berlin back with some more information on her gardenia. Hi, Mary Beth.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it spends every summer outside, and then I bring it in the winter, and it's not happy. I did have spider mites last year. This year, no. But the leaves, they start to yellow, then they just turn hard brown and fall off.
Does that happen just a few weeks after you bring it inside?
No, because I bring it in getting close to the first frost. It starts in January. And I had it sitting by the patio door last year, so I moved it to a bedroom so that it's not getting a draft every time I let the dog out.
That's a good idea.
It's doing the same thing this year. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Yeah. I mean, they're happier outside, but our winters just won't handle it. And it's doing fine for you in the summer when you put it back out?
Yeah, it'll get its leaves back, and I've got it to flower, but it takes a long time for those leaves to come back.
Mm-hmm. So the stress that it's getting inside in the summer is...
Or in the winter.
In the winter is...
Yeah.
It's having a hard time overcoming that.
Right. Yeah, because it's pretty much leaf bare by the time summer rolls around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, gardenia is one of those outdoor plants that I don't see inside as a houseplant very much, so I'm not sure what to tell you to keep it going so well.
Yeah, I inherited it from my sister, and I'm struggling.
Yeah.
And
if I knew more about gardenias as an outdoor plant, I could tell you if it really wanted a rest period in the winter. So you might... I would have to look up and see if it was the kind of plant that you want to give a little bit of a dormant period. I mean, I don't even remember if gardenias are evergreen or deciduous.
Yeah, I guess I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. So I'm not sure we can give you much more help except try and keep it alive. And when spring comes, you're going to be able to hopefully get it back out there and get it back outside once it gets warm, and it'll recover. We hope, at least.
Right. Mary Beth. Is there a way to make that recovery period go faster?
Johanna Oosterwijk, who is the manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, our guest for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Welcome back to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Johanna Oosterwijk, the manager of the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the UW-Madison campus. Questions about your houseplants? I hope you'll give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And let's turn right away to Dave in Arcadia. Dave, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I love your show.
Thank you.
We have a very large living room, and we have several large potted plants, and we have a trouble with our cat wanting to go in there and dig all the time, and we've got several cat boxes around the house, and we just can't keep her out of there. She keeps going in there and digging the dirt out and making a mess, and I suppose she's going to the bathroom in there too. I don't know, but... We tried putting some tin foil in there and laying it in there, but she just pushes that out of the way.
Uh-huh. Guys, this tin foil really works well for me with my cats. They don't like it at all. So, you know, another one I've heard, Johanna, I don't know if you've heard this before or not, but someone called in once and said they put pine cones. They just cover the base of it. Of the, you know, that area inside the pot with pine cones, and that person, their cat, did not like it because they're kind of sharp edges.
Yeah, I think that might be useful. I was going to suggest, you know, gravel or rock, something that's big enough that they can't just paw it away, so small river rocks kind of size, but something that they wouldn't be able to dig in as easily.
So river rocks, or you could try, if you've got pine cones around, Dave, you might try them as well.
Yeah, I'll give that a try.
Yeah,
because that looks nice, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, then.
All right, give it a shot. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have a question here. I want to give a chance to Tara email to ask for suggestions for an outside flower or plant that grows well on a rock wall that faces south.
Oh, there are so many wonderful options. I'm assuming you want something kind of low growing, but, you know, if you want something that'll flow and spill over the rock wall, there's lots of really nice alpine ground covers. Something with a great scent to it would be creeping thyme. Thymus serpylum would be really nice. There's a bunch of creeping sedums, Sedum spireum, Sedum kamchatcum. They're pretty common sunny ground covers. You could also, if you wanted something that was for a little more color and some flowers, look into some of the alpine plants. They really do mm-hmm. well in a rock wall if you can create some crevices. Dianthus would work for that. There's actually some little tiny creeping veronicas. Might be too much sun for the water peri Veronica umbrosa. But look into alpine plants and sunny ground covers.
You know, one of my neighbors in our neighborhood has a really cool thing. She took some of those alpine plants, and she had a pot that was broken, so I think she just put the pot down, and then she planted the alpine sort of inside the pot and then out, and they kind of hang over the edge of their rock wall.
Yeah.
And so it looks, in the summertime, when they're in flower, it looks like you've got something pouring out of this kind of fairly mm-hmm. large-sized pot. And it is very cool.
Yeah, that would be great.
Very cool. Lynn in Sparta, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I have a crown of thorns. It's probably, I think, 6 or 7 years old. It's huge. It's bigger than I've ever seen in a house, I guess. It is probably about 3 feet tall, and, of course, now it's all bending over. It was blooming 24/7 up until about 3 months ago. Even the parts that are bending down are still blooming some. I'm terrified to cut that off or to replant it. I have never touched it. A florist once told me they don't usually get that big. I wouldn't do anything with it, but we need to do something. It is just too huge, and I don't know how, and I'm afraid I'm going to kill it. My daughter gave it to me. It has a lot of sentimental value.
Oh, for sure. So it's a crown of thorns. It's gotten too big, but can it be successfully cut back? That is the big question there, Johanna.
Yep, absolutely, you can cut it back. Don't be afraid. Be a little careful. Those thorns will get you. But go ahead and pinch it back. It'll resprout from the sides where you cut it back to. So
can I make it so that it's only like about maybe a foot tall?
Yes.
I mean, can I cut it back that much?
Yep, you should be able to. If it's a healthy, happy plant, it might actually appreciate it a little bit if it's getting to the point where it's, you know, toppling over with that much size.
And the cuttings that I take off, can I repot those?
You could.
Or root those?
Yep, you should be able to. With one thing to tell you about is it's got a very milky, sticky sap. So you might uh-huh. want to put some newspaper down because it will weep from the cuts.
Okay.
And because of that sticky, milky sap, you're going to want to let it heal over for at least a day before you put it into a rooting compound.
Okay.
Again, it's a succulent plant, so you don't want to use water culture to root it, but you can use a sterile potting mix, something that's light and fluffy, but don't stick it in the moist soil for at least a day. You need to let that open wound kind of scab over. Otherwise, water and pathogens can get into that cut.
Okay,
and cause
are
damage.
You talking about the parts that I've taken off? I leave those laying on
yep.
like a newspaper before I try to repot those.
Right, just leave mm-hmm. them for a day. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like you do with cactus.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
And I am using, it seems like the only thing I can water them with well is like a distilled water with like plant food in it, and I put it in a really sunny window. That's probably appropriate, huh?
Yeah, it should be.
It sounds great.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Cecilia next from Brookfield. Hello, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a poinsettia plant that I received in 2015. Absolutely huge and beautiful and gorgeous. It remained in bloom until April of this past year. I put it outside for the summer. Flourished outside. It was just gorgeous. I brought it in when the weather got cooler, and it seemed like it was happy enough, but now all of a sudden it's not so happy, and it's losing all of its leaves, and I moved it. It's in a nice window, and then I moved it to not so nice sunshine, and I'm wondering, you know, do I cut it back? It has not ever been repotted. Do I cut it back now and repot, or what do I do with it so I don't lose it?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I wouldn't probably cut it back. It seems like it's pretty big, and it might just be tired. They do like a little bit of a resting phase, and it doesn't sound like yours really had one. You could also check the roots and make sure that it's not suffering from the roots. make sure that they are healthy. So just pull it out of the pot, make sure that the media is not really sopping wet, and that you have healthy white roots that don't smell bad.
Okay.
So make sure that the roots are healthy. And at that point, cut it back, give it some new media, and then watch the water, water it as it needs. So, you know, let the plant tell you when it starts to put out new growth that it's ready to use some water.
Okay. Cut it back to maybe like 5-6 inches?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you make sure there's some side shoots.
Okay.
So the plant will re-sprout from the leaf axle. So where the leaf attaches to the stem, there's a little bit of a bud.
Uh-huh.
Make sure you leave 2 or 3 of those little buds because that's where the new growth is going to come from.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I will give it a shot.
All right.
Good luck.
Appreciate the call. We have Nancy and Appleton emailing to say the Boston fern and croton she brought into the house this fall have lost a lot of leaves and don't look so great. They have low humidity and heat does fluctuate.
Mm-hmm.
What can she do and what is the best way to transition these plants?
Well, the best way to transition them is slowly. They have to get used to a new environment slowly. They're not like us where we can, you know, be inside in one light level and outside in a different one and our eyes immediately adjust. They need time, and I know they'd appreciate a more even environment. Mm. Crotons will drop their leaves if they get a draft. So if they've been in a, you know, low 50s temperature for a while, some leaf drop wouldn't be unusual.
All right.
Well, regular light levels and even humidity and temperature if you can.
Heidi, where'd Heidi go to? Here we are. Heidi purchased a silver variegated English holly on kind of an impulse thing during the holidays. It's not hardy to her zone, but will it survive as a houseplant?
I've not worked with holly as a houseplant, but you might be able to do it. Just recognize that this time of year, that plant wants to be dormant. Yes, it's evergreen, but it's not going to be actively growing, and it's not going to be taking up a lot of water. So I'd recommend reducing the water. Don't give it too much light, and probably not too dry of an environment. A lot of times when we try to overwinter things that don't want to be indoors, a lot of people buy a bonsai that's a juniper, and that's supposed to be outside this time of year. In a house, it's not actively growing, but the roots stay wet. The leaves lose moisture to our dry environment, and that's really hard on them. So keep the humidity up and don't overwater it.
You know, I keep forgetting to ask, so let me bring it up now. There are events that are scheduled at the D.C. Smith Greenhouse, right on the College of Ag and Life Sciences part of the campus of the University of Wisconsin. And what are some things you've got coming up, Johanna?
Well, later this spring, we'll take part in Science Expeditions. That's the first weekend in April.
Mm-hmm.
So the days of Science Expeditions, I think, are March 31st, 1st, and 2nd. We'll be open March 31st and 1st, that Friday and Saturday, but there'll be stuff going on all across campus, and the greenhouse will also be open as an exploration destination. Since our 20th anniversary happens right around then, we'll have some extra stuff going on as well, just to celebrate all of the time we've been active.
So that sounds like a lot of fun. And you can join in, too, by the way, with your questions. We've got open lines to get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Patricia sent us a photo, and I've got it kind of blown up on our screen here. She said this plant was placed near a 60-watt incandescent light bulb and developed these spots on the leaves, kind of, I don't know, gray, yellowish spots, sandy yellow. I bought it in mid-December. Could they be insects causing these spots, or is it too much light? And she doesn't have the name of the plant, but it's a...
Yeah, it could be... I wouldn't necessarily say insects. That doesn't look like insect feeding to me. It could be light, depending on how close it was to that 60 watt, the light and the heat from that.
Yeah, if you're in there at 66 inches away or something, you're going to get you could get some problems. And typically you want to be that close if you can.
Yeah, it's hard to tell from that picture. And it looks like it's the backside of the leaf, so I'm not seeing the top surface.
Well, let's take a call from Carol in Toma next. Carol, hello to you.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I called about the ficus tree that we have. It's a very old tree, and it's been in my daughter's store. And this summer she put it outside. And since she brought it in, the leaves started to shrivel up on it. You know, I know they drop their leaves periodically, which it has, but now it's not looking good at all. I mean, it doesn't seem to have any new growth. I'm just wondering if it's
over and done with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mine always looked terrible in the this time of the year.
Yeah.
And they always came back in the spring.
Yeah, but they're pretty hardy plants. To see if it's, like Larry said, over and done with, check a couple of things. Bend the stems. See if they're still supple or if they're brittle and dead. Is there, you know, still life in those stems?
Yeah, I've been checking it. I just got here and I checked. They're breaking back quite a ways.
Okay. Yeah, and then check the soil. See if it's too wet and if the roots are dying.
Yeah, no, and since she brought it in, you know, she's kept it. This has been since, like, November this has been happening. And she keeps it watered periodically, but it's not overly watered right now.
Okay.
I'd still take a look at the roots.
Yeah, see even if it's not wet, see if those roots are healthy white and firm.
Okay. See, it's a very old tree. You know, it's like probably a two-inch diameter trunk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big one to lift out of the pot.
Right.
Yeah. You can still scrape away a little bit of the media.
Oh, without taking it out of the pot. Just scrape away some of the dirt, media?
And look at the roots?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
See if they're firm and, you know, if they're strong, because that's the base for the whole plant. If the roots aren't healthy, it's not going to get water if you use it, and then the whole plant's going to suffer. Yeah, that it's dry so far back is concerning.
Yeah, I'd take a look at those roots. Good luck, Carol. Thank you for calling. Francis in Muskego, give you a shot now. Hi, Francis.
Oh, hi. I wanted to ask you what kind of faith you have in those water meters. I love to use them because my sticking my finger in the ground is in my ground sometimes is hard and not right, but do you have faith in those little water meters that you stick the probe in the ground, and if it tells you the ground is wet or dry, or do you use them at all?
You know, I don't use them at all. I tend to go with, you know, does the soil look dry? I don't usually put my finger in because after a while, you know, everything just feels wet.
Yeah.
If they're smaller pots and a plastic pot, picking it up to see if the plant
That I do now. So the other questions, if you don't use them, what about using those pots that have the string on it and you put the water in the bottom pot and they feed themselves? You don't use those either, right?
We do sometimes use wicking, and that can work really well, but don't just, you know, do that and ignore the plant. You still want to pay attention because if the reservoir runs out of water, or if the string gets pulled to the side, then you think the plant's getting watered, but it's not.
Right.
So, yeah, I think those can work very well, but they still need attention.
And African violets, do you? I get magazines galore, and they all say you should transplant them every year. And I wondered if I got some I don't, but then some of them don't look good. Is there any rules on how about transplanting plants? Or you just use your own good judgment?
You know, everything is so different. You know, depending on the plant, depending on your environment in your home, I just use my best judgment. And if the plant looks like it's filling out the space and in need of a larger pot. I don't have a good rule of thumb because there's so many variables.
And do you have a perennial that I can plant outside that really does bloom all summer? I mean, you know, starts in July probably and lasts all summer. Are there any such perennials?
There aren't a lot. There are some that'll, you know, bloom in June and then give you another flush, or like Veronica will have a really strong flush in June and kind of steadily bloom for the rest of the summer. Trying to think if there's something that I would really say is going to flower for you all summer long in the perennial line.
I know there's like foxglove, you cut them down and they'll bloom again, and lupines,
right,
too, will do that. But I just wondered if there's, you know, somebody that you just, out there, I have several big gardens, and I wish there was somebody besides annuals that,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Some
okay,
of those,
hey,
you know, those old standbys, the Rudbeckias, the black-eyed Susans,
yeah,
really do, but they also benefit from some deadheading.
Yeah, okay. You've answered many questions for me, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. I was mostly interested in that probe, and I...
I've got one, but I still use my finger once in a while.
You do? And what luck do you have with it when you use it? You just don't trust it?
Well, I put it in, and sometimes I look at it, and it says there's enough moisture, but it doesn't look like there's enough just to my eye.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So, and this one is like a double probe, too, that it looks at fertilization or nutrition level as well.
Yeah, I just had the water one, and it was, I think it would save a lot of time. I got a lot of those, like you have. I got oranges growing on mine, but But it takes about a year and a half before you get the orange.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. I thank you very much. I know there's other people who want questions answered, and I thank you.
All right. Thanks, Francis, for calling, and let's turn to Penny. Penny in Cedarburg. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. My question is about baby tears, the larger leaf variety of baby tears.
Yeah.
I love them. I've bought them. But after about 6 months, they seem to die on me. They'll start out really well. They'll begin to trail and, you know, add new growth, but then they sort of peter out. And I keep trying, but I'm thinking I'm doing something wrong, but I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong.
Okay.
I love baby tears. I usually have a lot of them in the greenhouse, but I've seen what you're describing. They're one of the standbys I use in containers because they work so well covering the soil around another pot. Usually when that happens, it's because somebody let it dry out and then started watering it again. So the roots die and then the rest of the plant just doesn't have any support. Mm-hmm. So try and keep the plants evenly moist. Don't let them dry out because there's, sometimes they do great and it seems like just one drought event.
Is all it takes.
Yeah, and then there's nothing I can do except take cuttings from the end and start them over.
Oh, is that what you do?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
They're really, really easy to root.
Okay. So there you go, Penny. Thank you so much for calling. And Johanna, thank you. Here we are out of time. It's been great, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
I'd love to do that. Thanks for having me, Larry.
Johanna Oosterwyk, she manages the D.C. Smith Greenhouse on the campus at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And again, they've got that kind of nice event on March 29th.
March 31st to April 1st.
March 31st to April 1st on the campus, and a whole lot more going on at the same time.
We're not usually open on weekends, so it's a chance to come in and see the greenhouse on a Saturday.
All right. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.